Blog Talk Radio. Welcome once again to Madam Perry Salon. This is your host and cruise director, Madam Perry. And some of you know that Madam Perry Salon began about 6 years ago as a blog where I interviewed authors, artists, and just all kinds of interesting folks that I have the good fortune and pleasure to know. I wanted the salon to have more of a salon feel of like the old arts and culture salons in Europe and Asia a couple of centuries back. And now, this year, it turned into a blog, and I have even more fascinating people for you. Tonight's guest is somebody I met in New York at Book Expo last year, and I think she's about to step into the salon now. You notice that she didn't come in on the transporter with Star Trek. She's much more divine than that. Kathleen O'Keefe Canavos, welcome to Madam Perry Salon.
Well, thank you so much for having me in your salon tonight. I just feel so privileged, and I always enjoy just kind of tinkling right into something. So it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have you here. Just find a seat anywhere. I hope you like what I've done with the place. I wanted to give it kind of the feel of inside of Jeannie's bottle.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah, and I think Jeannie left behind a few of her old veils and stuff, too, and those are fun to play with later after the show. We can have a good time with that.
Oh, party time. I love that.
Dress up. Well, I'm so happy, as I said, to have you here. I met you last year at Book Expo America in New York, and I don't know if you, of course, you meet so many people. But
I do remember
anyone,
you, though. Yes, I do.
Really?
Yes,
you know,
I do.
You say that, and I wouldn't be surprised. I was in the line next to, there are certain lines back there for people who haven't been. There's an area over on one section, several tables with lines, people to get in and meet authors and get their books autographed by them. I was in the line next to yours. And I think as soon as I got that person's phone, I wasn't even in your line yet, you know, because I wouldn't have broken the line, but I wasn't even in there yet. You reached over to me and smiled. And I was like, oh, God, did I do something wrong? Did I drop something? Did I, you know, did I make some kind of faux pas here? And you just smiled and said, hi, would you like to have my book, Surviving Cancerland? And I was just kind of.
I do
and
remember
I was,
that. And then I remember your accent. That's how I remember you.
And I just kind of dumbfounded. Like, I go, Like, I just learned how to talk yesterday. And at first I was like, Cancerland? And then you said, yes, yes, right here. And then you autographed it, you smiled, and you just had such an enchanting aura about you. Now, I'm not someone like you that can actually see or color or paint an aura, but I do get the feeling, and I think most of us do get a feeling around people, but you have such an, and I use the word enchantment, it's like you just sort of, your aura reached out and enchanted people. So I've got the book, and it was a while before I started to read it, Surviving Cancerland. And I have to say, one of the great,
go ahead. No, I was just wondering, it took you a while to read it, but then what happened when you started to?
A couple of things. One is that even though, you know, fortunately I haven't experienced, haven't had cancer, I learned a lot from you that really hit was fit with my own beliefs or inclinations about being an being your own advocate for your own health and well-being, and about listening to my inner guides better, listening to the spirits who I do know talk to me. I call them my guardian angel spirits, whatever. Some of it is friends and relatives that have passed on, but I know when they talk to me, it's just, do I always listen?
That's
the
true.
Other thing I got too was that my mother had gone has had breast cancer, and she's a survivor. I felt like even though I stayed with her and took care of her, I learned more about what she was going through after reading the book, what she had gone through, and had even more empathy and respect for her.
Oh yeah. Yeah, there's no way that you can help someone go through that and not have it affect your life forever. But one of the things that I found, Jen, is when you go through a really bad crisis, which I'm talking about in my book, and although my crisis was a health crisis, the steps that I took to get myself through it, anyone can use in any type of crisis in their life. And one of the things that a crisis does is it gives you an opportunity to reach depths of empathy and sympathy you could never have reached anywhere else. Mm-hmm. And that makes you a deeper person. And so when you take care of someone like you took care of your mother, it opened up levels to you that you could never have reached any other way. And that makes you multi-leveled now on the earth plane, and it makes you a better person. And when you see somebody who's in crisis, you have the wherewithal to reach out to them and say, you know, take my hand. I know what you're going through. I've walked a mile in your shoe. And so, although my book, like I said, is I'm using the cancer as the vehicle to drive a bigger story, it really focuses on how our dreams and our spirit guides and our prayers are so important for getting us through the worst times in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And, you know, sometimes people might think, oh, well, that's all kind of, what they call it now, woo-woo or whatever. But if you believe that, I think there's several different belief systems you can have that where it fits beautifully, whether you say, you know, I'm a Christian, I'm a Muslim, a Wiccan, whatever it is you believe, or I just believe that there's a source of energy out there, whatever, then you've got to believe that there's something that speaks to you, somebody that cares about you, things that are unseen. And sometimes there are people who always say, well, I feel my grandmother around me, or I still feel the spirit of so-and-so that I loved around me. And I think it's sometimes if we just tune in and listen and just pay attention, just be quiet.
Yes. You know, listen to that still voice. And, you know, you made a very important point. Some people feel that these spirit guides are our guardian angels, getting information in dreams is woo-woo. But I was telling you just before the show started that I was down in Virginia Beach at the IASD, which is the International Association for the Study of Dreams. And I was presenting with a Dr. Larry Burke, who is a radiologist out of Duke University. He's now retired. But he actually got funding, Jen, for a study to find 20 women whose dreams diagnosed their breast cancer. And in the dream, they had to have tactile experience. In other words, a spirit guide had to take their hand or touch them in some way. They had to hear verbal words. They had to actually see the spirit guides. And he found 20 women, and I was one of them because I went through this breast cancer 3 times where the doctors missed my cancer and my dreams told me I had it. And his research has just been published in the medical journals. So all of a sudden, woo-woo has become grounded. It's like we're going back to Dr. Freud, and we're proving that there is something more than science. There's something more than what we can just see, feel, and touch in the waking world. There's a whole other world out there that gives us information that is just astounding and can be proved in the waking world. And that's what's known as a prophetic or precognitive dream, where you kind of get information in a dream that can then be proved in the waking world, and there's no way you could have had that information.
Mm-hmm. So let me go back just a little bit with you and talk about you. I think that you said even as a child, you had the ability to see auras or would color auras around people, and made your teachers upset.
It really did. I was in kindergarten. And I loved being in kindergarten. I loved school from the time I was very small. And all of a sudden, my teachers and the principal needed a parent-teacher conference with my parents. So my parents came to school, and they showed my parents my drawings. And they said, Kathy does not color inside the lines. And she's coloring people really funny colors. I mean, look at all these bizarre colors. We think that there's something wrong with her eyes. So we want you to take her to an ophthalmologist. So my parents did. Of course, my mother was very concerned. My mother's a nurse. She was like, oh, my goodness, my daughter's got, you know, something really wrong with her vision, and this could impair her for life. So she takes me to a really well-known ophthalmologist, and he checks my eyes and asks me about what I'm drawing, and I tell him, and he says, there's nothing wrong with your eyes. I don't want you coloring people funny colors anymore. And I want you to outline whatever you're coloring, and you color inside the lines. And that was the first time I realized that doctors, with all of their top-of-the-line scientific researched and medically, you know, cutting machines, could not see what I saw, which was auras. And so that was one of my first big awakenings. And trying to explain to him my auras was like trying to explain to somebody with red-green color blindness about the beautiful pink flowers on a green bush. They're going to look at you and say, what pink flowers? There's something wrong with your eyes. There's something wrong with you. So I learned very early to be quiet, take that blessing, put it, hide it in my pocket, put it down in the basement of my being, and lock that door and not let it out. Otherwise, I was constantly going to be, you know, taken to the doctor, have to go to the principal's office, be in trouble. And so I found a way to shut that away.
And amazing, though, that you did know to keep it, not to just ignore it, not to listen to people and say, oh, well, I shouldn't be doing this, I'm in trouble. But you knew it was special, you knew it was your gift, and you knew that you were to cherish it, but just had to keep it to yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of children have to do that. I think a lot of children are born with that gift. I really believe that we are all born intuitive. And as we grow up, we put those intuitive gifts away with our toys, and we become adults who only believe in what they can see, feel, and touch, and can be proved and measured with a ruler, when that is such a small portion of our real world. Because if dreams were not important, why would we be spending one-fourth of our life in that state?
And why do you think that we do that? Put it away as we become adults.
Because we're ridiculed. We're told that's children's play. You know, if you went up to your boss and said, well, you know, I think in the stock market we should look at this stock over here and maybe not that stock because I'm getting an intuitive hit over here, they're going to laugh you out of the room. And yet that's what a lot of stock market people do. They get an intuitive hit. They hear something in the dreams. Who are the people who pulled their money out of the stock market just before the last crash? Those people who had those dreams and ignored them because, oh, it's just a dream, they went from multimillionaires to middle class overnight.
Now, didn't you say, though, that you learned later that your mother also had this Yeah, same gifts, but learned how to suppress them too. Or
yes, she did. She had the same gifts. They actually came from my grandfather's side of the family, which was her father. He was extremely psychic. And because my mother was orphaned very young, her parents were trapeze artists in the Barnum and Bailey Circus, and my grandmother was dropped from the trapeze, and she died. So my grandfather took his two daughters, my mom and her sister, and put them in a convent to be raised by the nuns. Well, you can imagine, the nuns are having no part.
Oh, gosh.
I'm psychic anything. It didn't take long to, you know, for my mom to shut that right down. And she realized how important it was not to show that part of your side. You had to keep those gifts locked away in the closet, like, you know, skeletons or skeletons from murder or incest. It's something you did not pull out, tell other people, and you certainly didn't play with it in public.
Now, yeah, too. How fascinating, though, about the Barnum and Bailey connection with your grandparents.
Yeah. My grandparents held seances, and apparently they were quite phenomenal. And I know that there are a lot of people who hold seances and they're fake. Mm-hmm. I know that. I do. But when I do occasionally, and not very often, actually, I'm going to be doing at the end of the month on the 31st, I am going to be doing a radio show on nightmares, and I'll post it up on my Facebook page, which is Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis. And what I'm going to do is readings using tarot cards for people who call in. And I have my own technique where I tell people, I know your questions are probably really embarrassing, or you don't really know how to voice them because they're so deep, and they're so traumatic, but your spirit guides know exactly what they are. And so if you keep your question to yourself, I'm going to ask you some questions about colors and numbers and seasons, and that's going to tell me which tarot card you're picking, because your guides are going to tell you the colors, numbers, and seasons, and I'm going to give you the answer to your question without anybody hearing the question. And so I'll do that, and I'll give them the answer to their question, and it will blow them over. They'll go, oh, my goodness. Yes, how did you know that? How did you know that name? So I know that there are people who really do have that gift. And, yes, I do know that there are charlatans. I do know that.
Were your grandparents, at the time, what they called spiritualists?
I don't know what they called them. They
because
were trapeze
what,
artists.
Know,
they were spiritualists.
Yeah.
They were tracks of, jacks of all trades in the circus. So I never met them. They died. I take it back.
Yeah.
I did meet them when I was 3 for about a week. I came over from Germany because I was born and raised in Europe. My dad was a Green Beret. And the military kept my father over in Europe all the time. They never brought him back. And so I didn't come back to the United States until I went to college. But I did come back to Chicago when I was 3. For the first time, I was a stranger in my own land just to meet my grandparents. And they died a couple of months later after I was back in Germany. And I loved them. They were really nice. I did, and they absolutely adored me.
Oh, of course. Let's go to your book, Surviving Cancerland. And the subtitle says Intuitive Aspects of Healing. And for people, if you've got to go to the website and see the picture, and I've got it on my link. If you saw this on Facebook, you saw the link I had. The cover of the book, and you incorporate some of the John Tenniel drawings from Alice in Wonderland,
mm-hmm.
and some
yes.
callbacks to the book in there.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me how you came up with the idea, or were inspired to use that, incorporate
well, because
that.
Because when you're going through cancer treatment, but actually when you're going through any medical treatment. And you're given pharmaceuticals, let's face it, the doctors don't really know what's going to happen to you because none of us are norms. We're all individuals. We have our own individual fingerprints. We have our own individual retina scans. Some of us are allergic to potatoes. Other people aren't. Someone else is allergic to salmon. Somebody else isn't. So when we're given pharmaceuticals as a part of our treatment, you don't really know what's going to happen. And so on the cover of my book, you see a bottle that says, "Drink me." And if you remember in Alice in Wonderland, when she drank it, she grew so huge, she almost blew up the room. And then when she drank, she took a pill, she shrank down so tiny she could fit through a keyhole or under a door. And that's part of what we go through when we're in any form of health treatment. And so what I'm showing in the book is when you are in treatment, you have to be your own self-advocate. And sometimes you have to tell a doctor, you know, what am I taking this for? Why am I taking this? I'm having this side effect. What does that mean? Because each time you have a side effect and they give you another pill to counteract that side effect, you get another side effect. And so in the book, I finally say at the end of one chapter, where does it end? And it ends when you stop taking the pharmaceuticals as much as possible. You need to take some maybe to get you to a point where you can heal yourself, because our bodies are amazing healing tools. Just think about it. You cut your finger. What does it do? It heals.
Mm-hmm.
If you keep focusing on it and fidgeting with it, it's not. It's not going to heal because you're focused on the cut, not the healing. But if you are aware of it, and you say, well, I cut my finger, but I will heal. And then you forget about it and you go about your daily chores, your finger will automatically heal. It just takes care of itself. So in my book, that's one of the things that I point out. Yes, you may need to take some pharmaceuticals to help you get going, but at some point you have to take over that ride. You've got to take over that car. You've got to be Alice in Wonderland who says, you know what, I'm not taking any more pills. I don't know what they're going to do to me. Are they going to stretch my neck? Are my arms going to get really, really long? Are my feet going to shrink up? I'm not taking the chance. And that's what I did. When the doctors wanted me to take a second chemotherapy, I simply said, no, not going to do it. And that did not make them happy. But Alice had had enough. Alice did not want to drink any more stuff.
That's true. And, you know, now I don't want to sound like I'm giving an indictment on the pharmaceutical industry. But there was a time when I was working for a company and that created software and hardware for pharmaceutical salespeople, and or at least they loaded onto their hardware like laptops. And I was sent out one time to train some reps on a or to help train somebody on software migration. I was amazed. I mean, we all know about big pharma and the money and so forth, but part of this. And you probably know this already, Kathleen. Part of this software was teaching them how to, when they go out to the doctor's offices, and you know they always send the best-looking people, the salespeople, and they take lunches and they take gifts to the doctors, and they're able to keep track of which doctors prescribe what the most. And when they prescribe something a lot, then just name whatever, some kind of drug, whether it's, I don't know, Lipitor or something. Then, oh, he's a Lipitor lover, is how they categorize him. So we'll get him to go speak to other people, other doctors, and talk to them about how good it is, and write him, and this was, you know, we said, in here, you can just push this button, and it prints out your little check to hand them right away, and give them some more gifts. You see where I'm going?
There's big money in pharmaceuticals. Yeah. Yep, there's big monies, and yes, the hospitals are encouraged to push them. But what I did a couple of times to my doctors, I looked at him and I said, you took a Hippocratic oath. And I remember one time, the last time when they were really pushing the second chemo on me called Taxotere. And I said, no, I'm not going to take it. I don't believe it works. I've seen so many women in my cancer group who took it and they died after 3 years. And you're saying, if I don't take it, I'm going to die? The cancer is going to come back? Within five, well, that's been almost 15 years ago. It didn't come back. And there comes a point where you have to say enough is enough. And I remember my doctor looking at me and he said, you're right, I did take that oath. And so I must say, I can do no harm. If you don't want to take that chemo, don't take it. And so I never did. Sometimes you just have to remind them.
And I think that's what is also seems to be a great movement on to people to take care of themselves, take care of their bodies, to try to avoid having some doctor-prescribed things for them that they don't think they really need. When I was started doing CrossFit training or exercise last summer, I found a lot of people there were middle-aged women, up from 50s and 60s. And we were all in there sweating and doing our renegade rows and climbing and with younger people. And having a great time. And they loved it. They go, God, we're so glad you're here. We think that's so cool that you're in this and training. And I think there seems to be a good movement. It's like a mind shift.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see this?
I do. I think that rather than taking diet pills, women are working out. It's healthier. It works just as well. Instead of eating out as often, they eat in more because the food that they cook doesn't have salts, butters, creams, fattening foods in them. And I think that because of that, we're seeing people who were on insulin now going off of insulin for type 2 diabetes. They're managing their diabetes with their diet and their health regime. And so, you know, one of the things that I encourage people to do all the time, because I remember when my cat, Bluey, my Siamese cat, came down with pancreatitis, which is very odd in a cat, and he wasn't fat. It was just a genetic disorder. And the vets had him on 9 different medicines because he had E. coli in his stomach. He had these horrible infections. They kept saying, just put him down, put him down. And I said, I could see this light in his eye that was saying, hang in here with me. I'm going to get over this. Hang in here with me. So I did. And he was taking Epogen shots for his heart. He was taking another type of shot to build up his white blood cells. I mean, it was on and on and on and on. And he was taking insulin. I had him on insulin. And I slowly, very slowly, started to chart his diet. And I would take him on little walks. And when he'd get tired, I'd pick him up and carry him home. It was okay, but he was out walking. And slowly I started weaning him off of all these medicines. And the doctors kept saying, and these were the doctors, these were regular endocrinologists, regular medical doctors, because the vets didn't know what to do. So Bluey was kind of one of their study specimens, and all of their, all of these doctors' students would have to go in and meet Blue. And slowly I started weaning him off of them and charting the progress until finally he was off of everything, and the doctors were amazed. And he was extremely healthy, and he lived another 9 years.
Oh, 9 years?
Another 9 years. And the doctors kept saying, no, you can't take him off the Epogen ever. He's going to be on Epogen forever. He's going to be on the insulin forever because his pancreas isn't working. But his pancreas would kick in occasionally. So there was just some short going on there. And by regulating his diet and figuring out what made his pancreas work and not overload it, he lived for another 9 years. And he died as an old cat. He didn't die of some disease. He died of old age. He was 15 or 16.
Well, see, and that, now if that's not a testimony, I don't know what is. Here's hope.
I believe we can do that. I believe we can do that. We just need the pharmaceuticals long enough to regulate our body. But if we trust in the healing capability of our bodies. And I mean, this little cat didn't know that he couldn't heal. This little cat did not know that he had to take these drugs or he'd die. No, you know, he didn't understand that. He simply healed because he was alive. And then I showed the doctors. And I said, he's off of everything. And they said, well, oh my God, how long? And I said, 4 months. So you're kidding. And he was healthy.
You know, this is something I meant to read this a little bit back, talking about being your own advocate. This is in your book in chapter 10. It's called The Wannabe Doctor from Hell, and that certainly was wannabe doctor from hell. And then right after that, so I'm not going to read that part, because you've got to get the book, folks. That's all there is, and you'll be happy with
that.
But
funny.
Right after this wannabe doctor from hell, and I think we, especially if you're over 40, you've all been through this at times. But then after that, you're in the hospital, okay, and a little nurse comes in. A student nurse, and you say, see, my heart rate and temper are finally under control when another student nurse arrives. Take this, she orders with a smile, handing me a tiny white pill in a small white cup. What is it, and what is it for, I ask. It's insulin for your diabetes, she answers with a bigger smile. I don't have diabetes, I answer with no smile. You're in the wrong room. Oh, let me see your wrist, please. The smile vanishes as she plucks the little cup from my hand and makes a hasty exit. I just learned life lesson number 5. Always ask, what is that and what is it for? Concerning any medication given in the hospital. How do people survive here who are alone and can't ask these questions? This place is crazy.
You know, I forgot all about that.
Sad but true.
I forgot all about that. Oh, it's so funny hearing that again. But, yeah, absolutely. Alice
matters.
In Wonderland. Here, take this pill. Let's see what happens.
Mm. Oh, yeah, it matters. It matters. When I was in for my hysterectomy, my husband kept asking people because I'd had a migraine. I was sick. I was nauseous. And my husband asked so many people that came in, could you change her gown? Could you change? Oh, okay, somebody else will come in and do it. Somebody else will come in. So finally he says, just give me the gown. I'll change her, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't get anyone until the next day when they hear that my doctor's coming up there and they can't change it fast enough. You know, so.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I know. They're so overworked. I mean, my mom was a nurse, and I remember her saying to me in some of her last years, she said, you know what I loved about nursing, why I got into nursing? Because when I first became a nurse, there were so many of us, and there were so few patients per room, I could go in and I could give them a back rub when I knew that they were really uncomfortable. And it would relax them so much that they would go to sleep without a sleeping pill, and they'd stay asleep all night. And she said, and I loved talking to them and holding their hand and helping them through their fears. She said, now I can't do that anymore. She says, I barely have time to pop a pill in their mouth so they'll sleep and not bother to ring the bell all night long, because I have so many rooms and so many people to take care of and so much paperwork to fill out that I can't do the job I used to do that I loved as a nurse. Mm-hmm.
And that's sad. And that's sad. That's a heartbreak. You know, one of our favorite listeners and friends here of the show is a man named David Hurley. He is a poet and an author. His latest book is Sharon Tate and the Daughters of Joy. And he has sent in questions on message. So I've got one from him right now I'd like to read to you.
Okay.
He says, in Smile or Die, The Bright Side of Cancer, an essay in her bright-sided How Positive Thinking is Undermining America by Barbara Ehrenreich, said this of her negativity toward breast cancer. The more fellow victims I discovered and read, the greater my sense of isolation grew. No one seemed to share my sense of outrage over the disease. The cheerfulness of breast cancer culture goes beyond mere absence of anger to what looks all too often like a positive embrace of disease. Without question, there is a positive thing that fails and cancer spreads or eludes treatment. Then the patient can only blame herself. She is not being positive enough. I do see some value in your approach, but I tend toward pessimism. What do you think about the extractions from Barbara's book? And he puts a smiley face there, too, so he knows that we're just doing it for discussion.
I think he's got a great point, and I do have an answer to that. I really do. First of all, I believe positive mental attitude causes your body to vibrate at a higher frequency, which allows you to heal. So it's not so much that you are ignoring the fact that there is a big problem. That's not going on at all. But while you're in the fight, while you have the breast cancer and you're in the battle, you need to focus on the positive. when you have come through it, as I have three times. I'm now breast cancer three, free 13 and 18 years, something like that. You know what? I don't even focus on the number anymore. I just know it's gone and not coming back. Now I can get angry for those women who cannot because they're in the fight. I want them to stay positive and know that I am going to get angry. I'm going to make myself heard. And another reason why you want to stay positive is you want to show the women who are in that battle, yes, you can survive. You can survive stage four recurrence. It's not a death sentence anymore unless you focus on it as one. I had friends in my group who died from stage two because they believed they were going to die. I had stage four terminal. I'm still here talking to you now. And I'm carrying this same positive light, beacon of light over into other things I'm doing. For instance, with my Wicked Housewives on Cape Cod TV show, I'm doing a documentary on battered women. And I'm holding a fundraiser for the Battered Women's Shelter on Cape Cod. And I'm going to be writing a book, a compilation book, about women who have gone from abuse to abundance with the focus on the abundance. And when I was in a big meeting today with a lot of people with a lot of deep pockets, I remember thinking to myself, this meeting is necessary to get the funds into the battered shelters. But my documentary is on abundance is then going to show these people where their money went and also show the women who are still in the battle that, yes, you can do it. These women have. You can do it too, and they're going to reach down, give you their hand, and pull you up. And that's exactly what my book does, and that's what somebody keeping a positive mental attitude does. And the other thing, Jen, is this. Nobody's going to live forever. You need to focus on that. Nobody is going to live forever. And who really wants to, right? I mean, who could take a lifetime after lifetime after lifetime of all these difficulties? There comes a point where you need a break, you know? You need to go over to the other side and regroup. You can come back if you want to. So the choice is, do you want to live this life pessimistic, or do you want to live it in a state of joy? The real question. We're all going to have crisis. There's always going to be a storm. But remember, no storm lasts forever. And so while you're hunkered down in the rain, laugh at it. Laugh at it, and it will chase the boogeyman away.
I like that. You know, let's see if I have another comment from David yet. Okay. He'll be back in a moment, I'm sure. Thank you, David Hurley, for that question. You know I love you.
It was a great question.
Okay. Actually, he says the question above really applies to what she's saying now. So. I need to share some information for some of my nice sponsors, so I'm going to give you a few minutes. And when Kathleen Cat comes back, we're going to talk about some other cool things like Wicked Housewives and V and Me and all kind of cool stuff. So stay right there with us. Kathleen, now you get a break to go get some water or some hot tea or something.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to take my phone with me and listen to all the people who are.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, folks, you know I do everything I can to bring you the coolest stuff ever, like the guest I have, like tonight, like Kat, and information you need to know about all kind of things going on. First of all, let me tell you something. Have you ever wanted to know just where to find something? Wait, let me get this straight. Ooh, I'm just so agog. Normally I'm not stuttering this badly, but I have got someone who has put together something that's for all of us sci-fi geeks and tech geeks and everything. This guy's got a project that's just a dream come true. Let me tell you what it is. In fact, it's a hologram. Have you ever wanted to be on your laptop or maybe your smartphone or something, and all of a sudden you're on you got the hologram right in front of you, just like your own sci-fi or Doctor Who or somebody. Let me tell you about this guy. He's just the coolest ever. he's got a project. He's put this together, and he's trying to make this very, very cost effective. What it is, he's got a Kickstarter campaign for a product that needs support to get mass produced. It's a pyramid hologram, and it converts phones and tablets into holograms. And he's trying to keep this down to just $15 per pyramid hologram. Now, yes, it's a Kickstarter, but it doesn't cost you anything to go look, because I want you to go look at it. I want you to say, oh, no, somebody's asking me for money again. I know. But it doesn't cost to go look. And then if you want to help him out, which I think you will, you should. Here is, let me tell you what it says. It's got a picture. In fact, I've got a link to this Kickstarter project on my, it'll be here on this Blog Talk Radio page. I'll also have it on my Madam Perry Salon page on Facebook. It's called the Holapex, and that's H-O-L-A-P-E-X, the Holapex Mobile Hologram for Smartphones and Tablets Gadget by Isaias J. Perez. Now, let me tell you what he says to you. He said, I started this project, it's just a fun project, about 8 weeks ago, and it was all fun and games until I saw how good it looked and how close I felt to the future with the effect that it gave out. As many of us probably have tried, I made this with the CD case first. Long story short, I ended up cutting myself twice, gave up, and tried it with the softer plastic, which looked great. Then I thought, why not make this a product and then share it with the rest of the world? However, in a sturdier and more high-quality material than just a soft, flimsy film sheet. And he's got some pictures here of it and pictures of it working. And fantastic. He says after 40-plus prototypes, 15 different shapes, or 15-plus, 20-plus different dimensions, and over 650 hours blueprinting and designing, I have created the neatest and cleanest hologram reflector with the best angle for reflection for tablets, iPads, tablets up to 11 inches. I call it the Holoplex Vivid. So there's more to it. He's going to talk about why his hologram pyramid is different from others, double uses, more things you can use it for, and he's got some great pictures. Now, excuse me, it's a little dry down here, my allergies. I'm going to have the link on here for that. Now, the next thing I want to tell you about is, where am I? I promised I would play this song by Kim Meeks. People here. Yeah, I just had one of my, sorry about that, folks. That doesn't normally happen. I had one of my little dry throat moments. So, two more things. One, do you love jewelry? Of course you do. But you want something special. Sometimes people can just get things off the rack, and sometimes we think, no, I don't want something off the rack. I want something that's more like me. I found this lady. Her name is Radha Mulder. Her name is spelled R-A-D-H-A-M-U-L-D-E-R. And she's a jewelry designer. She was in the Netherlands. She sells internationally, though, so you don't have to go to Amsterdam just to get her jewelry or the Netherlands. But it's only fine jewelry, 92.5% sterling silver and gold-filled jewelry. Now, if you go to her website, you'll see her new collection. It's beautiful, original. When you look at it, you think of romance and beauty, and that's exactly what she wants. She studied metalsmithing and clothing design before becoming a jewelry designer. But she likes to, the thing about Radha Mulder's jewelry is she likes to let the ideas, feelings, colors, shapes, and textures just sort of blend themselves together and translate and work together to contrast and complement each other, and then, of course, complement the wearer. In fact, if you go to her website, I keep it open sometimes because, you know, sometimes websites where you clue in, they'll have some automatic music come up, which is bad if you're at an office job or someplace where you don't want people to know you're surfing for a moment and then some kind of music comes on. And sometimes it's annoying, but this is, she has a large image on the top of a seashore. The waves are rushing to shore, and that's what you hear, is the waves rushing to shore. And to me, that kind of sets me in the perfect mood, just to feel a little bit dreamy, maybe kind of meditative. It just makes me feel good. And then look at the jewelry. You will love it. Now, I'm going to have some pictures of the jewelry on Madame Perry Salon page. I've got the link to her jewelry. Her jewelry website on the page here, and I'm also going to tweet it and have it on the I think I'll put it on Google Plus as well, so check that out. And one more thing, I just meet the most fascinating people. I really do, and I'm very fortunate and very grateful for it. Somebody asked me, do you like gold? Well, yeah. And they said, well, if you do, you'll want to spend 3 minutes to watch this video about how you can get a free gold savings account at thegreatglobalgoldrush.com. You buy direct, no bankers, no brokers, no fees. Something has proven for, it says you want to save. If you're going to save, save something that's proven for thousands of years to hold its value. You can even save as little as 1 gram. Per month. This is gold for the masses. Now, this came from my friend Ron at the Great Global Gold Rush, and I'm going to have his information. I don't have it up here now, but I'll have it after the show is over, and I'll have it also on my website and tweet it. But let me tell you, well, let me just listen to it in his words.
Does the economy have you on edge? Take control of your future and protect your assets with gold. Gold is the only money that has never failed in the 5,000-year history of its use as currency. That's because gold holds its value. Gold is true money and will always be the backbone of the world's financial system. Gold is a great hedge against economic and geopolitical uncertainties that make paper money unreliable. Don't save paper dollars, save in gold. gold by visiting thegreatglobalgoldrush.com. Paper money has no real value, but gold does. With the experts at thegreatglobalgoldrush.com, you will buy gold direct. No banker, no broker, and no fees. Take charge of your future now with gold at thegreatglobalgoldrush.com. thegreatglobalgoldrush.com.
Okay, so yeah, check that out. Ron knows what he's talking about. So we're back with our guest, Kat O'Keefe Canavas, and somebody else just came in the studio, our friend Kenya Colbert. Hi, Kenya.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Good. I'd like for you to meet Kat.
Hi, Kenya.
Hi, Kat. How are you
Thanks
doing?
Thanks to meet you.
You
Oh, the party's
well.
Really getting started now, huh?
I could not miss this party. Great, great. It's so good to hear you. You sound so good. Very healthy.
Thank you. Oh, thank you.
I was going to say, I had another message from David Hurley. He says, the question above replies to what she's saying. And then he said, sorry, my kid melted down, so I missed the first part of the comment. It's okay, David. You know, it's always available as a free download on iTunes or Stitcher later. So, yeah, take care of the kid. Had a meltdown.
That happens.
Yes, it does. I love him so much. So we've been talking about your book, Surviving Cancer Land.
Uh-huh.
But there's so much that you do. You've got your, you have a show, a radio, video show. You got a couple of them, don't you? Podcast?
I have my radio show, which is under the Wicked Housewives on Cape Cod Network. And that's the Kathleen O'Keefe Cannabis Show. And then I have the Wicked Housewives on Cape Cod TV talk show and the Wicked Housewives on Cape Cod TV cooking show. So, yeah, and then I'm a columnist for a couple of different magazines. And if I don't necessarily have a TV or a video show to share with the magazine, Fee and me do a little selfie together. And Fee is Felix, my Siamese cat. And so if you go to Google or you go to my websites and just type in Fee and Me, you'll see us. Felix loves to sit in my lap and watch himself on a selfie. He's mesmerized with himself.
Okay. So for people who haven't seen this yet, just give a little description of what they'll see with Fee and Me, with Felix.
With Fee and Me? Well, mm-hmm. Fee is my Siamese cat, like I said, and he's a flame point. So he looks like a little Casper the Ghost. We kind of named him wrong. We should have named him Casper. And he demands, he doesn't ask, he demands to sit in my lap when he wants to sit in my lap. So I have a choice if I'm on TV, if I'm on radio, if I'm on Google Plus, whatever I'm doing, either pick him up so he's quiet or let him howl like Howler Monkey. I swear his father was a Howler Monkey. So what I realized when I was doing the selfies of Fee and Me videos for the YouTube channel that I would then put onto some of my articles for Women's Voices magazine, is Fee would see himself on the selfie and just freeze. He was mesmerized. I would even be waving my feather, talking about my three-ship dream, you know, on God that I actually did. It was like a joke, and he never moved. The whole time I was moving the feather, he was frozen in place because he was so in love with himself on that camera.
He's saying, what a good-looking cat.
Yeah, he'd turn his face and look at himself with the other eye and then the other eye, and he'd sit there for a good 30 minutes, never moved.
That is so funny.
And you'll see it if you go to the Fee and Me videos. He will sit there the whole time, and he knows I'm talking to someone. Now, he's seen me on my radio shows talking like I'm speaking with you, and he assumes that there's somebody in that handheld phone that I've got up to my ear. So when I look at him and say, well, Fee, let's say goodnight to the people, he'll all of a sudden make a noise when he's basically saying goodnight.
Too cute.
Well, that's pretty cool. See, I've got two corgis, cool. And when I get on, when they see me put the headphones on and get the mic, they turn into extortionists.
Treat time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you think you're going to be on the air. There's a price to pay. There's a toll involved.
It's going to cost you.
Yep. Yep, they're so just children with fur. They're just babies with fur.
Baby. Yeah. Yeah, but you couldn't live without them. Tell us about these wicked housewives. I want to know about these wicked housewives.
I was about to ask about that, Jennifer.
Go ahead, Kenya.
It doesn't mean that we fly into the studio on brooms. We're not that kind of wicked. No, it's a colloquialism up in the Northeast in New England. If something is really cool or really good, it's wicked. It's wicked bad. If somebody says, oh, my gosh, that is wicked bad, it means it's really cool or it's really good. And if it's really, really good, they'll call it wicked pissa. And I think that's from the pissa clams. So they'll say, oh, that is wicked pissa. So my co-host and I were sitting in a really old ancient bar here on Cape Cod that's one of the most haunted places on Cape Cod. And I just love the vibes in there. It's just full of people even when it's empty. And we were sitting there and we saw up above the kitchen, Wicked Kitchen. And she said, you know what? We need to name our radio show The Wicked Housewives on Cape Cod, and we're going to interview ordinary people with extraordinary stories. And so it just kind of developed from that. And now, like I said, we are doing a documentary on battered women. And the name of the documentary is From Abuse to Abundance. And we're interviewing women who got out of the abuse. They changed their lives. They took their children, and it's been years later, and they're in a safe place. They've been in a safe place long enough now to actually be able to hold their hand out and say to the women who are still in that fight for their life, take my hand. You can do it. I know we always hear about the women who didn't make it on the TV or on the radio. Their spouse, their significant other shot them or whatever. But there are so many women who did make it through that storm. And so we want to celebrate them and hold them up as a beacon of light to those other women who are still in the fight for their life.
Yes. Beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
I like that a lot. By the way, I also have another comment here from David Hurley. It says, sharp woman, good interview.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, David. Thank you. Give that baby a hug for me. I love babies.
Now, you said you also write for some magazines. Tell me where we could see you. Do you write regular columns?
I do. You can go to Women's Voices Magazine. Just Google it. I have the home column where I display my cooking videos. And so what I did for the home column that's coming out on the 1st is I'm showing people with my video in the cooking studio that we have at C3 TV, which is a beautiful studio, and they're actually building me a new cooking set with a Viking stove top and cooktop and double ovens, and oh my goodness, they're spoiling me rotten. And what I'm showing is, you know, so many of us today, Jen, are downsizing. We're downsizing our lives. We are downsizing our homes. We're downsizing our eating because we have been overeating as a nation for quite a while. We're downsizing in every way, shape, and form, and I'm showing how you can make stuffed turkey sliders for a Thanksgiving dinner that your kids are going to love. And it takes 15 minutes or less. You don't have a great big bird that you're baking in the oven.
15 minutes?
Yeah. 15 minutes or less from start to finish. You can actually cook them. I show how easy it is to cook them in a little toaster oven. in a little toaster oven.
Oh,
and you can
crazy.
Serve the gravy on top of them, and you can serve, you can stuff them with your bread stuffing if you want, or you can stuff them with cheese and onions, anything you want, and serve them with mashed potatoes and gravy and your cranberry sauce, and you have a gourmet meal that looks so beautiful. It could be on the cover of any cooking magazine, and it's so easy.
Wow, that sounds really good.
And you can do that with any holiday. Like you could do stuffed lamb burgers for Easter. And we did stuffed sirloin burgers for the 4th of July. And we fed the whole audience the 4th of July burgers, which you would see in that video. So your imagination is the only thing that is going to hold you back with a stuffed slider.
Wow.
Okay, this is where I have to say, my first impression when I met you last year is right. You are, my intuition is correct. You are a goddess. You are an absolute goddess.
Well, see, it takes one to know one, and I looked over and saw you and immediately knew it. And thought, you know what, I got to get this woman over here, give her my book, and meet her. And now look at where we are more than a year later, talking like old friends on the phone.
Exactly.
Having a party
amiga.
In the bottle.
Allah. Exactly. And I love it. I love it so much. The only thing I don't love is that it's almost time. Well, it's time to go. I've kept you over an hour.
No, I didn't even notice. I really didn't notice. You know, girlfriends having a party, you don't know. The only thing missing are the pink martinis for Breast Cancer Awareness Month. But when we hang up, we can do those and imagine each other and just imagine clinking those little glasses together.
Yes, we can. In fact, we can also, always plan for a little bit extra time in the studio just in case. But I have another message here for you. Let's see.
Don't you just love chat?
Kenya, do you have another question?
Yeah, I was actually wondering about the gosh, you got my brain just, you took me away with that pink martini thing. I'm stuck over there now. I wanted to ask you about the Wake Up Woman. I know that it's an organization, and I can see that Jennifer put that on there, but the Transforming Their Lives, is that a part of the cancer awareness, or is that another version of what you're working on? You're working on so many things.
I know. Actually, Wake Up Women was founded by Karen Mayfield. It's Wake Up Women, and it was founded by Karen Mayfield out of Arkansas. And so I'm one of the Wake Up Women, one of our founding groups, and Karen and I are in contact all the time. We've done books together. Karen's done quite a few books, and now I'm actually getting ready to do a book for the Abuse to Abundance, where I'm going to be giving out a call to everyone. So all of the listeners tonight, if you have a story where you went from abuse to abundance and you've been living that life of abundance for a while and you feel strong enough to share it, please contact me, because I would love to put your story in the compilation book, and my agent's going to be shopping it around to the big publishing houses. So it's a great way to get you seen out in the publishing industry.
Yes. Wow, wonderful, wonderful idea. I love that. That Transforming Your Lives, I do love that as well. And in the part that you said, Wake Up Women, that is, I love the name. Who came up with that?
Karen did. Karen Mayfield.
Did she?
Yeah, she's an amazing woman. You should have her on your show. She's amazing. You'd love her. Teresa Velarde, too. She's another founding Wake Up Woman. And when we get together on the phone, it's just like the three of us right now. It's party central over the line.
That is wonderful. Yeah.
And it's probably
I love that.
With Kenya here, there are times when I've known her for, how long have I known you, Kenya? About 16 years?
Ooh. A lot. I try not to throw numbers around, you know.
Hey,
it's been a long time.
Kenya, you know, Connie had her birthday this weekend, and she's 60, and she said, I go ahead and tell everybody how old I am because I have a lot of friends that didn't make it now to this age.
Oh,
so she says, that's why I celebrated.
You gotta be sure to tell her happy birthday.
Yeah.
Every day
yeah,
above
that.
Ground is a day to celebrate. Every day above
it
ground.
It really is.
Yeah. So let's say with Kenya and I, and this is probably the same with you and Kevin, is that we have so many adventures and we've had trips and we've had plans. And usually, so many times, the better we plan things, the more you can be sure it's not going to go according to plan.
That's right. That's right. So you just have to go with the flow. And you know what? It's 9 times out of 10, it turns out to be a whole lot more fun. Like when the captain comes to pick you up for the airport. Or you miss the bus and you got to take a cab. All you have to shove yourselves together in the cab. It looks like, you know, you were in Athens and crammed yourself into one of those little tiny cabs and take that all the way to the airport in another city. Yeah, it's always fun.
Oh, my God.
It's always better because we have all these stories to tell about. And then this was happening and you did that. And
mm-hmm.
So
always.
True. Love those. Love those moments.
Okay, I had one more comment from David Hurley. He says, just in case, in regard to what she was talking about at the beginning, the Varieties of Religious Experience is a collection of university lectures by the great William James. And in it, he astutely explores topics such as the reality of the unseen and mysticism. He says of people who have had profound mystical experiences, quote, they have been there. And no, it is vain for rationalism to grumble about this.
Mm-hmm. No, he's right. You know, and there's a very special word there that you said, no. There's a difference between saying, well, I believe in this because, you know, it sounds right, versus I know because I've seen it. Mm-hmm. Somebody who says, yeah, I believe in ghosts, it makes sense. I can say I believe in them. Versus someone who says, I know there's ghosts because I've seen them. And mm-hmm. that's the difference between a mystic and someone who's not. They know. And it's very hard to explain it to someone who doesn't. And I always say, don't try to force yourself when it comes to things like this. You are exactly where you are at this moment and cannot be anywhere else because this is where you need to be in order to do the next step to be somewhere else. Until you finish this step, you can't take the next one or you're going to fall. So embrace where you are. And if you're not where you want to be yet, know that you will get there because you've gotten to where you are now from somewhere else. I know that sounds a little confusing, but if you think about it long enough, you go, you know what? Mm-hmm. She's right.
That's right.
I do know that.
That's right.
That is perfect. That is perfect, Kenya. And Kat, I love it, love it, love it. I'm sitting, I'm quiet because I'm just taking all of this in. And while you're saying it, I'm thinking of things in my life where it matches up perfectly. And for Kenya and our both, and for probably so many people we know. So thank you. I think that observation, that reality is so perfect. I think this is where I'm going to just stop. Let you go to Felix and your husband.
thank you so much for being so generous with your time. Kenya, for having me on the show with you guys. This has been such fun. We've got to do it again. And like I told you, Jen, I really want you to come on my radio show, and you can bring Kenya with you.
Oh, thank you.
Would that be fun or what? Oh, my God.
Everything is
party
fun.
On.
Girl party. Another girl party.
Woo! I think everything is fun with both of you gals. Well, listen, I'm so sorry. Would you please? Yes, I was going to ask you. Would you please come back? Because I've just barely touched the top of the iceberg, or the ice of the martini, or the
that little pink martini. Yes.
Yeah, got the
and next
top of the
time
martini.
Maybe it'll be a purple one. We'll have to put grape juice in there and celebrate the book. To abundance because the color for women who are in an abusive relationship is purple.
Oh, okay.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. I didn't either.
So we'll make that happen.
Looks like a grape martini next time.
All right, folks. The book is Surviving Cancer Land, Intuitive Aspects of Healing, a Kathleen O'Keefe Canavas. I've got all kinds of information on all my pages about her, where to find her, where to see her videos. I've even posted a couple of videos this week of yours, and I'll have more. And she's promised, you heard her, she's going to come back again. I'm so honored that I was that you reached out to me and that I was led to meet you.
Thank you.
Nice to meet you, Kathleen. So
nice to meet you too.
Right. Cannabis, this is Madam Perry Salon signing off. And Kenya, you know I tell you the same thing almost every day. I'm grateful that I have you too.
And me for you, sweetie, every single day. Mwah.
Mwah. And give Felix a little love from us too.
I will. I can't believe he hid this long. Maybe my spirit guides are holding him back. I know where he is. He's in my bed with the heating, with the electric blanket on. That's where he is. It's cold on Cape Cod right now. Yeah.
Don't get me and Kenya started on guardian angels either, because we know that ours have a good time laughing at us. So when they push us to sleep, they're like, "You said the same thing." They're still laughing like, "Oh, these knuckleheads. Oh, we'll do the best we can with them." Anyway, love you. Thanks for being here on Madam Perry's.